under this garb were perfectly ordinary Americans.
Howdy, hi, and welcome. This is Fear of a Dork Planet, episode 38, the episode that they tried to store in an underground communist locker in Western Germany, only to have it claw its way out through miles of concrete and find its way unto you, dear listeners.
Who's they?
It's capital T-H-E-Y. It's always they.
Okay.
Them. The man. You know. How you doing, Annie?
I'm great, Eric. How are you?
I am doing super duper, and it's been a pretty good week for myself. How about for you?
It's been an awesome week, actually.
Yeah? What's been up? Anything you want to share?
Well, some of it I can't because it's work-related.
Right, legally binding, kind of.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, and as a hitman,
you know,
is there a HIPAA thing on being a hired contract killer?
It depends on how I dispose of the body.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway.
Sure. Do you have to put it in an official, like, surgical container, or is it just you leave it where you find it?
Shut up. Anyway, last week we were talking, not last week, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
We were talking about how I found my sister.
Yes.
Well, guess who else I found last week after our program concluded?
Your gerbil, Sir Nibbles a Lot.
No, last episode we were, in fact, talking about butt stuff. But there were no gerbils involved.
It took me a second to get there with you. Okay, so let's see. You found your sister. You found your brother.
I did find my brother.
And how did you find him? I mean, like, how is he doing? Are things good?
He's great. He's 28. He lives in California. He works as a bartender. He's really totally cute. So he looks nothing like me or my dad.
Lucky kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's awesome. Have you emailed with him? Have you like,
no? I've been mostly talking. He's not online at
okay.
all. So I've been talking to his mother and his fiance.
So that like runs in your family.
What?
Just like social media, pretty much.
I'm all over the place.
Well, you're all over the place on the Facebook, right?
I'm on Facebook
and on Twitter,
and Tumblr, and
all right. Yeah. Okay. I take that back. What am I doing? I'm talking crap.
So what else is new?
Aw.
But yeah, there's your family reunion update.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it, like, the conversations are still going well. I mean, is
yeah.
it? Are they who you thought they would be after
well, I didn't even
a couple
know
weeks
that,
of conversing?
I didn't even know that my brother and his family existed until about a month ago. So I didn't have any preconceived notions.
Right.
But yeah, my dad's ex-wife is awesome.
That's cool.
Which is my brother's mom.
Yep.
Yeah, they're all amazingly cool people.
Is it nerve-wracking digging that stuff up? I mean, or
no.
was it until you figured out that they were cool and now you're like, yeah, this is awesome?
I don't know. I never assumed that anything was going to be bad.
Right.
You know, because I wasn't talking directly to my dad. So he's the only screwed up one.
And you haven't reached out to him in any way, shape, or
form? I don't
form.
Even know if he's alive and I don't care.
Okay. Wow. All right. Not nearly as exciting or as eventful as that. I found a shirt company that makes plaid shirts.
I was thinking I need to buy some more flannel shirts for the coming autumn.
These you don't need to, because these are way more expensive. Like, what is the most that you would pay for an article of clothing made in the United States?
Brand new or?
Yeah,
like,
brand new.
Maybe $20.
Okay. Yeah, this is like a lot more than that. This is the kind of thing that, like, if I suddenly robbed a bank, how I would spend the loot.
You'd spend it on plaid flannel shirts.
They're not flannel. They're plaid shirts.
Oh.
Flannel is the material. These are, that's like a winter shirt.
Oh, okay.
These are just plaid shirts, cotton, made in America. But what's neat about them is that the color schemes are pulled from various albums and books.
So for
instance, they have a Clockwork Orange one. You know the famous Clockwork Orange cover that's kind of like a 1960s drawing of Alex. It's got the bowler hat, and it's got the vibrant orange and the star around the eye. It's not like an actual human face. It's kind
right.
of like abstract.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's the Catcher in the Rye carousel cover.
Mm-hmm.
They took the color palette from that and made a plaid shirt out of it. The Cocteau Twins, My Bloody Valentine's Loveless.
Really?
Those colors are a plaid shirt. So they're all, what do you call a color piece? A palette? Yeah, they're chosen from the same palette. I was thinking of the same, like when the colors have an official number or category.
I always think of them as paint chips.
Pantone?
Yeah, Pantone. Yeah, okay. That's what
so they're all the Pantones for that particular album cover.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool. It's quirky. I think it's the kind of thing that, like, if I had money to invest, they're like $135, $140 a shirt.
Jesus.
Right.
They better last forever.
Well, I think that's, we've talked about this before, I think, but that's the difference of something made in America by an adult versus made in China by a child.
The only time I've ever spent over $100 on an article of clothing was when I bought my Doc Martens.
Yeah.
They were worth it.
Yeah. Well, they last you forever. Right. I don't think these shirts necessarily would last you forever. But I think it's the difference between... I mean, that's what people forget when buying American. Like, mm-hmm. people are like, buy American! Well, that doesn't mean go to an American store and buy. And you know what I mean? If you want to buy something made in America, you're going to pay money for it. Like, did you ever see Saturday Night Light Fever?
Mm-hmm.
The opening scene is John Travolta walking down the street with a piece of pizza. And he goes in and he sees a shirt in 1970s that's $30. And he has to go in and put $5 on it. Well, that shirt, by today's standard, is a $90 shirt.
Right.
But that's what Made in America was. It's why your parents, my parents, didn't own huge wardrobes, right? They didn't own a ton of clothing. They had their Sunday best.
Right.
And then they had maybe one or two or three or four outfits to carry them through the rest of the week. Luckily, because of slave labor... No, seriously, right? Like, because we have slaves now.
We have slaves now?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, how do you think you spend $5 on a t-shirt? It's because another country has employed wage slave labor, right?
Yeah.
And so we have the luxury of benefiting from that.
That sucks. I'm really depressed now.
Isn't that terrible?
I kind of want to throw out all my clothes.
Well, there was an article that said somewhere along the line, like, the average American has something like 48 slaves between shoes and food and electronic devices. Something like 48 slaves working for them at any time.
But doesn't my working retail somehow balance it out?
Well, being a wage slave, you are also part of that world, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's thoroughly depressing when you really think about it.
Very much so.
So like shopping at Walmart or Target or Kohl's or all of these places where food is clothing is made in Sri Lanka and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, those people aren't slaves like in the way that we as in America have them, but they're paid
sweatshop. Yeah,
sweatshop labor and stuff like that. So. Moving away from that, what was supposed to be a rather interesting kind of cool pop culture clothing kind of concept.
Well, I was going to do a segue, like really clever, from sweatshop to, oh my God, it's hot, but you won't let me comment that it's
because
hot.
Because we always seem to comment that it's either too hot or too cold.
Well, it's July.
Yeah, so therefore, this isn't like breaking news.
Anyway, it's really hot.
Oh, don't say that. Of course it's really hot. It's July. And you can't put a fan on because the mics will pick it up.
Eric is forcing me to sit here in sweatshop conditions to do this show.
That's right. This show. this episode made by Annie the Wage Slave. Yes. Podcast Slave Labor. So out of Chicago, another place where it's exceptionally hot. How's that for a thing? You can cool off by seeing the coolest show in town, which is a David Bowie tap dance musical called Changes. Now,
okay.
I'm going to read to you here. This, you're going to love this. Let me see if I can pull it up here. This is from the Chicago Tribune, written by Lauren Warnecke.
Sure, why not?
W-A-R-N-E-C-K-E. Warnecke? Warnecke? Warnecke?
Anyway.
But anyway, she does a couple things in here that I absolutely can't stand, but I'll get to those in a second. So the plot goes something like this, and I'm quoting, in a psychedelic space realm, there lives a gaggle of beautiful space angels and a Dr. Evil-type villain called Altego, who is never seen without his two henchwomen and could alternatively be interpreted as rock star whose rise to fame has corrupted him.
Altego.
Through Altego's infectious influence, one of the angels is seduced into joining the dark side, losing her wings in the process. This totally messes up everything. But spoiler alert, guess what happens?
What?
They defeat the evil doctor, Altigo. And, of course, she gets her wings back.
Of course.
So, they all go happily ever after. But what I can't stand about this thing is that the writer of this article refers to herself as a Xennial.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who is born between the gap in Generation X and Millennials.
Okay.
Which seems like just really desperately trying to find a niche that you belong in. Like, either you're a Millennial or you're Gen X.
Right.
If you're a Millennial who has a sense of nostalgia for a time you didn't grow up in, that doesn't make you a new category.
Right.
Right? And I'm interested in, number one, what a catastrophe or train wreck this Bowie tap dance musical is. Because, like, some of the music they don't even have the rights for, so she talks about how, like, there's just sort of orchestral movements which are supposed to be indicative of.
Okay.
And they're hand-picked Bowie songs. So it's not all from a particular album. They're from multiple albums stretched out over a career to be something greater than they are.
You know, you can get carried away with the posthumous, you know, reverence.
I agree. And she comes at it as, like, I'm a Xennial. I miss the whole Bowie thing.
There's no such thing as a Xennial.
Right. So you're a made-up thing, and you're using that as an excuse for you not to have an interest in Bowie. Now, you're welcome not to have an interest in Bowie. That there are thousands of people who don't, right?
And they're all wrong, but anyway.
But to hide behind a made-up generation, right? It's like almost, you know, so are we almost the greatest generation? Are we almost the baby boomers? Are we baby zoomers? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's stupid. Like, where does this, all of this sort of self-identification end? And I think it's, I heard a great quote from Neil Tyson Degrassi. I always say his name wrong. Is it Neil Tyson Degrassi or Neil Degrassi Tyson?
I don't know. I was really afraid you were going to say Neil Gorsuch, so I'm
no,
really...
and I don't know who that is. So his thing was, we are made up of everything, right? Everything shares same kind of basic building blocks,
right,
in the world and in outer space. And so he goes and says, you aren't special. You're just unique. and I really like that. Because it's like, yeah, at your foundation, you're exactly the same as everything else. So enjoy that.
Yeah.
Now you've got to do something different. And by calling yourself a list of things doesn't actually make you different. Go out
right.
and do something different. Go be something different rather than just proclaiming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, people who, you want to get real people fired up on the internet, tell people that if they're not actually in the process of writing, they're not writers. Like, every now and then Stephen King will be like, I meet kids all the time, and like, how do you be a writer? And he's like, you sit down and write, otherwise you're not a writer. And they're like, I am, I have all these ideas, and they're in my head. Okay.
Then get them out on paper.
Yeah.
And until
you do drafts, and until you really craft, you're not a writer. You know, and it's one of the things that we learned in college, and we were just kind of like, what? But people get really fired up over it on the internet. Google it. And you'll find thousands of great arguments from people who are trying to desperately, you know, it's like, I'm a musician, but I don't know how to play any instruments, and I've never written a song, but I feel it in my heart. Right? Like, I'm a race car driver, and I don't have my license, but I'm there. So my question to you is, what album or what artist do you think needs a tap dance musical? I mean, let's say this is a trend and it picks up, that suddenly everybody is crafting songs from various artists and making them into things.
Well, I know you already have one in mind.
No, I don't. No, I wasn't going to go with that.
You are so unprepared for this.
I know.
Oh, man, who would I pick?
I was literally running out the front door when I thought of this. Like, I read the article this morning while I was eating my oatmeal, and I was like, this is amazing. We need to talk about this.
How can you eat oatmeal when it's so hot?
Because it cools you down if you eat something hot.
I'm thinking.
All right. So Tool is not on
I the wasn't block. Even going to mention Tool.
And more importantly, does the world need a tap dancing musical?
Not really, no.
I mean, that's a lot of clippity-clop. Like, I don't understand how tap dancers don't have, like, chronic migraines. Yeah. Shuffle tap, shuffle tap, shuffle tap.
God, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
You know, it's like if you were to draw a Venn diagram, I think, of all the things Bowie loved, tap dancing, musical, probably hits a little bit of that area, but not a whole lot of it. Like, it's not dead center.
Ooh, how about something by Björk?
Ooh, I could see a Björk tap dancing
that
musical.
That would actually fit.
Yes. You could bring in some old Sugar Cubes stuff.
Yeah.
Here's my pitch. Oh, my God. Okay, so here's my pitch. Ready? God dies, right? Deuce does not exist. And if he does, I always notice him. Then we go into Army of Me as this believer who now understands that God is dead must come to terms with a new set of beliefs, a belief in self. And so it builds up to Army of Me.
Okay.
So the big tap dancing finale, as our heroine overcomes the declining structure of a church trying desperately to maintain relevance in a world that has proven not only that God exists, but now that he is dead, must overcome.
You need to write this shit down.
Until
then, you're not a writer.
You know what? I just got ripped off a second time. So I told you, remember a couple years ago I told you about my snakes on a plane?
Yes.
Okay. So when I started doing the novel sound, I did a series that I called Exploitation. What did I call it? It was XXX. And it was Exploitation Something Experience.
Don't tell me you were ripped off by Vin Diesel.
The Exploitation Extravaganza. Oh, I forget what it was called. But anyway, no, I was not ripped off by. But one of the things I did was Terrorosaurus Rex. So
okay.
Terrorosaurus, WRECKS, Rex,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was about a person who goes to recreate dinosaurs, but the DNA is infected by zombie dinosaur DNA, and they create this giant Tyrannosaurus Rex in this prison that goes completely ballistic, and it's a you know, people are like, oh no, it's a giant dinosaur. Then it turns out
it's a giant zombie
dinosaur, and it's got like cavemen inside him and stuff like that. Well, lo and behold, all my notes just crazy falling out here. Lo and behold, there is a movie on DVD at this stage, and I can't find it. I think I sent you the clip, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, there's a movie coming out called Zombiesaurus. Here we go, Zombiesaurus. And here is the plot. You ready for this? A militia unit led by Cachilla Vasquez, Duke Wayne, both of whom are actual, like, professional wrestlers / UFC fighters and stuff like that, and Stick Howard must team up with a group of tech and millennials after the United States is struck by an electromagnetic pulse asteroid attack. The group are trapped inside a labyrinth compound, right, just like my prison where Pterosaurus Rex takes place, and a maverick scientist and political terrorist responsible for the attack. This was just the beginning, as the evil doctor now looks to unleash the ultimate killing machine, the bioengineered Zombiesaurus. So a second time, I have been ripped off for a movie idea. So yes, the tap dancing Björk musical very well could be a reality.
I think it should be a tap dancing T-Rex zombie musical now.
Jurassic Park the musical.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I do have a serious problem with this movie already.
Okay.
Who names themselves Stick?
I think it's like a nickname. I don't think you say to people, call me Stick. I think something happens and you get called Stick. You're probably too
thin. Why would you call somebody Stick?
Or, you know, you're awesome with like a wooden bow staff.
Or you're dumb as a box of
sticks. Yeah. Or you're as volatile as dry sticks, because those are pretty violent. It's quite possible. But I've been ripped off now a second time for B-Films, and I don't know. I'm feeling rather litigious.
I don't know. I think they missed the boat on the title, too. I think Z-Rex would have been better.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Feeling me?
I like that better than Zombiesaurus.
Yeah.
But I feel like they stole my idea, right? And they were like, Pterosaurus Rex is awesome. But we can't take that because clearly it exists already. So we'll just tweak it a little bit. And instead of a mad scientist doing prisoners, it'll be a mad scientist working on, you know, global terrorism. So I like that. Does the world need a tap dancing musical?
About a dinosaur, yes.
About a dinosaur, yes, but about anything else, no.
Probably not.
So no. Unless you're giving us Jurassic Park, the tap dancing musical. Now, which Jurassic Park would make the best tap dancing musical?
Probably the last one, because you can't possibly screw up that movie anymore.
Jurassic World.
Ugh, I hated that movie. Yeah. It was awful.
You could have a whole dance sequence where dancers come out in high heels, and one by one the heels break, and they just fall and get eaten during the entire musical number.
I want a number where somebody tap dances on the guy's face. Yep. What is his name?
I don't know. Chris Pratt? That yeah. Character. You could have, like, Pterosaur. You could have a whole thing about, like, the guy who holds two drinks as he's running away. You know, and he could be like, my mojitos, they're so expensive here. My mojitos, I care about them more than my family. Mojitos, oh, the terror from the sky. I can't get my drinks, oh my. My mojitos. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten this thing half written, man. I'm there. So I get this email from you.
Yes.
This week, in all caps, screaming, see the void.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, The Void is a Lovecraftian horror film. But I'm going to try something out here. I'm going to play the ad for it, and we'll see how that works. All right?
I can see it all before me. Won't get far.
I need hands up front for you.
All right, so this is mostly a visual ad so far.
Yeah.
But what we get is a house in the woods, girl comes screaming out of it, two guys tackle her to the ground and proceed to light her on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then flash to a hospital. Where one of the guys from the house that they just caught.
Where'd you find this guy?
Is chained to a hospital bed.
Are you a copy of code 3 and I need assist?
Now there's sort of ghostly
cultists.
Daniel.
And then poor Daniel is a cop who has been stabbed by these cultists. He's bleeding out on the hospital floor because this is a hospital that has no available beds.
Pretty much, no. Well, it's in the process of shutting down.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, didn't you catch
that
part?
I missed like 80% of this film, I think. Because, we'll talk about that in a second.
There was a catastrophic fire.
Oh!
And they're having to relocate the hospital. It's still technically open, but it's out in the sticks.
And that's why there's only the nurse and then...
And the intern.
Intern nurse.
Yeah, and the other nurse.
And the doctor.
Yeah.
So it's skeleton crew.
Literally.
Who are they?
There is something calling them all here. I've seen this place before.
Everything has led to this. You will become something remarkable.
They did killings and sacrifices.
And so now you're getting kind of a bunch of flashes of syrupy, slimy,
tentacly, bloody, fleshy,
Cronenberg fly type creatures.
Yeah.
And all the while, these white hooded with triangle faced, white outfits, right? With
yeah,
these triangle
like in hooded robes yeah. With black triangles on their hoods.
They made people change.
Nothing else matters, Tom.
This isn't the end.
I loved this movie.
Statistically, you're more likely to die in a hospital than anywhere else.
I like that intern.
Yeah, she was cute. I liked her. So tell me what it was about. All right, so the basic premise is they bring in all these people end up in this hospital, very much like most horror films, right? Like all the survivors of something end up grouped in one area, and then they get picked off one by one.
Right.
Talk about why this film was all cap email worthy.
Well, it was like 11 o'clock at night. I had just finished a 9-hour shift and I came home and I'm watching this in the dark all by myself, and it freaked me out. I was tired, I was stressed out, and it just, admittedly, the second time I watched it, I wasn't as scared, but that initial impact of being just so overtired.
So you've watched this twice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shut up.
No, I'm not laughing at the fact that you've seen it twice. What I'm commenting on is that I guess I didn't watch it either close enough, or I didn't get the same experience. So I watched it and I was like, this is interesting. It's cool. I can see it's very, part of it is very much the thing in terms of there's some sort of bloodborne pathogen.
It's just all the best parts of all the best 80s movies, as well as a couple of more recent things thrown in there, I think. Like, I thought it was totally reeking of True Detective season one.
I have not seen True Detective.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it for me, when some things get so hyped up, they just kind of, they lose their appeal to me. And I don't mean that in sort of a hipstery way. I can't avoid it wherever I go. And I feel like if I don't walk away with the same level of love or commitment to it, then that the failure is in me. So like I had the same problem with Breaking Bad. It took me years to watch Breaking Bad. I finally did. By the time I got to season four, I was so tired of it that I just stopped watching.
I never really did get into it myself.
And I had the same thing with a bunch of other stuff. And sometimes I get bit, you know, sometimes I watch it and I'm like, oh, yes, I should have been watching this from the beginning. I was a moron. and then other times, not always that case. But you had a lot of friends, too, who were really into this.
Mm-hmm. I blathered about it all over my Facebook page. I was like, oh, my God, everybody go watch this movie right now. And everybody did, because I don't know why people listen to me. Fisher loved it.
Yep.
He actually sent me an email, and he was like, wow, great recommendation. Thank you. You know, he's like, I didn't find it as scary as you did, but I still thought it was amazing.
Yep.
Ray Garten loved it, posted it on his page, credited me. Thank you, Ray. And, yeah, a lot of my friends are just like, oh, my God, this was the best thing ever. And some of them were like, meh, like you.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't really move me, and I felt like it was trying to do a couple of different things. Like, one of the things it was trying to do was sort of this Hellraiser. One of the things it was trying to do was The Thing. I was torn between, like, so the evil doctor, the doctor who has started this whole cult, spoiler alert, is trying to bring his daughter back from death.
Yeah.
And has been doing nothing but failing. And so the hospital is littered with hundreds of corpses that of failed attempts, I imagine, right?
Yeah, which is right back to Reanimator.
Right. So it's all the people he's tried to kill to open up this gate.
Right.
But that triangle, all I could think of was there was a kid's cartoon show where there was there's a triangle that's the bad guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's trying to open up a rift between realities and bring his reality into Earth. And the kid is trying to, you know, the heroes of this cartoon, something Pines, or I don't know what it was called, but is trying to stop it. And at the end, you know, for a couple episodes, this creature wins. And that's all I kept thinking of while I was seeing it, was like, this is the cartoon version of this horror film. I liked some of the effects.
Very old school.
Yeah, very old school. Less is more in various sequences. There are a couple moments where I was like, oh, that's kind of gross. Or there's a very tense...
When the zombie's slamming its head against the pipe for all eternity?
Precisely.
I loved that.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing. I liked the almost cesarean section. Like, that had me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
When the... You know, she's got this big, the intern nurse who is freaking out because she's been given all of these drugs in the middle of a room to administer to this pregnant girl, is wigging out and she's flipping out. She doesn't know what to do
she's
or
like
how to
do
anything.
She's like third year medical school. She doesn't know what she's doing.
And she's flipping out because of all the blood. She's just not prepared for this level of horror. And she has to perform a C-section. So she pulls out basically...
A textbook.
Her textbook. And the top of it just says cesarean section. And she's like... You know, step one. And so I thought, like, you know, that's some pretty good dark humor. That was pretty enjoyable.
Well, that whole interdimensional thing, did you ever see Prince of Darkness?
Yeah.
There was that in there. There was a lot of Fulci in there. Like,
and then
it kind of
ends with 2001. where they go through the gate.
No, that actually reminded me of Fulci's The Beyond, because it kind of ends with the couple in this weird alternate universe.
Yeah, it's not really a win, but it's not really a failure.
Right.
It's a very sort of... And I always get worried when I go online and I'm trying to figure out, like, about a movie. You know, I'm like, oh, I want to know about, you know, those actors. And the first thing I see is always, like, you know, this, The Void, explained. And I'm always kind of like, if I need the internet to walk me through this film, it's either going to be ridiculous, or it's going to be convoluted, or it's going to be filled with fan theories.
Everybody's interpretation is going to be different. Yeah. So you can't one person can't explain it.
That's like, and I think we've talked about it on the show, but I'm not a huge Donnie Darko fan.
Uh-huh.
Like, I find it to be really, like, I think the target audience for Donnie Darko was like 17 and goth. Like, if you're like that age, you're like, yes. Whereas I think if you're older, you kind of just roll your eyes at the whole thing and you go, oh, yeah, that's the ending, huh? Okay, cool. So I felt like with The Void that they were really trying to build, but, like, I don't care about this cop. I don't care about his wife. She's in it for, like, 9 seconds, and then she's a victim.
Yeah.
And doing the, they have a shared mutual loss doesn't connect me to either one of them. You know, the mute kid, the kid whose throat's been, like, duct taped together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kid I want to know. Like, that's the kid I was concerned about during the movie. I was like, yes, okay. What's his story?
Yeah, the two guys that you actually think are going to be the bad guys at the film's start are actually the good guys, and I cared more about them eventually than I did about anybody else in the film.
That's the twist that I liked, which is in a lot of these films, you get the person who knows everything, and you're watching them scream and rail against a crowd of people, and you're like, why doesn't anyone believe this person? This twists that, where we get the people who know, who are in the know, who come in late, and they're yelling at us, and we're going, I don't buy a single thing these two jacks are saying.
They're crazy, they're armed, they look like militia from Idaho. Yeah, yep. I mean, why would you?
And I think that that was a really amazing twist. I really liked that concept. And it's strong, and they're capable, and they know what's going on. I like the way that hell sort of messes with them and keeps putting them in their worst moment.
Yeah.
So, like, they switch from there to the guy's dead wife on the floor or something like that. But I felt like everybody in this hospital suffered from the exact same familial maladies, which was, like, somebody you love is dead, and you can bring them back. And it was just, there was no great sort of spectrum of things people were being punished for.
Mm-hmm.
And so... If this mad doctor had sort of called all these people together, I thought that that would have been cool. You know, if he had brought and harvested them and chose them and drawn them in, that would have been cool if they felt compelled to be there.
Okay, you were just supposed to enjoy the monsters.
Okay.
That's all,
yes,
I wanted.
I did enjoy the monster with the hooked hands and the baby face with the seaweed coming out of its mouth.
Yeah, I called that the pork roast... Yeah, I can't talk.
Ooh.
Pork roast on giraffe legs.
Yes.
I loved that thing. That was awesome.
What would you name that creature? Like, if you had named that thing.
Pork roast on giraffe legs.
No, but then nobody says that. Nobody looks, like, nobody looked at a bear first and went, massive dog covered in nappy fur. Like, nobody did that. You know, I mean, you don't give something that description. What would you call it?
How about rhino skull?
Rhino skull? You should not name heroes or villains. I don't have one that's much better. I'm just simply saying it's easier for me to sit in this seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? Come up with a name now.
Yeah, lasagna lips.
Lasagna. It didn't have lips.
Well, it had like those, like, it looked like it was slurping spaghetti and it stopped halfway and was like, oh man, I got all the spaghetti and now these people, I have to kill all these people. I got a mouthful of spaghetti. So, Spaghettosaurus.
Spaghettosaurus.
Everything ends in saurus, yeah.
Can we spell spaghetti with a Z and make it a zombie?
Spaghetti.
Spaghettosaurus.
S-S-P. Spaghetti.
That's the name of our episode, Spaghettosaurus,
yes.
Rex.
Before we go on, I forget, we had asked people last time to give their favorite couple seconds,
yes,
and songs.
And
my
they
friend
did.
Dave sent one. Did people?
Yes.
We didn't write those lists down.
Oh, crap. Yeah, I forgot because Chris sent in one, too.
Oh, cool. We'll put that together at a slightly different time. I just wanted to acknowledge that before we move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So I sent you then to watch the Hammer film Captain Kronos.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm flipping through Previews, which is a magazine of all of these comics that are going to be coming out. And Titan Comics, out of England, is doing a series of Hammer films in comic book format. Like, these are the sequels these films should have gotten, or the continuations.
Oh, good.
And I saw Captain Kronos, and Captain Kronos was so silly that I was like, there's a guy named Captain Kronos? This is dumb. And then I watched it.
Told ya.
Captain Kronos is an amazing film.
That is the best Hammer movie. It's probably my personal favorite.
Yeah, I could not stop. You want to explain it real quick?
I just watched it this morning because I had forgotten about it. So yeah, it's a, what, like 1700s, 1800s England? Around there.
It's hard to tell. The film was made or released in 74.
Right.
So it's the 1800s through the eyes of 1974.
Right, yeah. So everybody's really oily and sweaty. Yep.
So Horst Janssen, mm-hmm. who plays Captain Kronos,
is amazingly hot.
Everybody in this film is pretty good looking.
But especially him.
Yep.
Yeah, he plays Captain Kronos. He's a former military man. He's been called to a small village in England because young girls are being found sucked dry, not of their blood, but of their youth.
Yes.
They've turned into these horrible old crones and died. So he surmises that it's a vampire who actually feeds on the youth of these victims rather than the blood. So now they have to find out who the vampire is.
And actually, I think that if you were to do a remake, this would be a really strong contender for a really solid horror film remake. Kronos is an amazing 1970s four, but like could easily be charismatic hero now. The opening sequence is him and Gorst, his hunchbacked friend, confidant.
He's a doctor.
Hype man. Yeah.
He's like the Igor lab assistant, but
Kronos is the beauty and the brawn. Gorst is the brain.
Yeah.
And the opening sequence is them coming into a town, and there's a woman in the stocks who has been clearly tomato-fied. Like, she's covered in vegetables and stuff like this, and she's all gross.
Mm-hmm.
And Kronos pulls out his sword. She thinks he's going to kill her. He says, "What is your crime?" Do you remember what she says?
Dancing on a Sunday.
Chops the lock off. And it turns out to be Caroline Monroe.
Yep. At her hottest.
Oh yeah. stunningly beautiful. But I love their relationship because she is immediately captivated by Kronos.
Who wouldn't be?
And he could not care less.
Mm-hmm.
Like for about, what, 3/4 of the film, he just stays at a very safe distance. Like she has to sleep with him the first night because they only have 2 blankets for 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's freezing out. So she chooses obviously Kronos over Gorst. And he kind of like rolls his eyes and very begrudgingly shares some of his horse blanket. But you know Caroline Monroe from The Abominable Dr. Fibes.
And Star Crash.
Oh, that's what I wanted to get to. I wanted to build up to that. Yes. So Star Crash was the new Mystery Science Theater. It was in the new Mystery Science Theater films. It is an abysmal film starring a very young David Hasselhoff. A very hot Carolyn Monroe who is in multiple bikinis throughout the entire film.
Because in space you always wear a bikini.
She's also in The Spy Who Loved Me, The Golden Voyage of Sinbad.
Maniac. The original Maniac.
Oh, is she in Maniac?
Yes.
Oh, yes, she is. You're right. Of course, well, I mean, of course
I'm
you're right. She's in a lot of really...
I met her once.
Did you really? Was
yes,
she super nice?
Yes. She was so gracious and just really friendly and not at all, you know, what you would think someone of that caliber would be. She's just totally normal and she's still smoking hot.
Yeah. Oh, I saw, you know, current pictures of her and she looks great. She's a fantastic sort of sidekick. She's willing to go along with it, but then there's points where they're like, "We need to use you as bait." And she's like, "Nah, I'm not really cool with that." But she'll do it, you know, anyway. But the character of Kronos is so swashbuckling and so flamboyant. And in the style of early Hammer and exploitation films, he's in skin-tight pants no shirt for a good 90% of that film.
It's great.
He keeps finding excuses, like, to take off his shirt. And I was watching it going, you know, there's not many films today that kind of share this equal screen time, you know. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the speed at which the vampire worked. Like the one girl who walks behind a tree and all of a sudden she's attacked. But my favorite moment has to be the girl who catches a vampire bat to the face.
Oh, God, that was hilarious.
And is wrestling on the ground with this... with this taxidermied or stage prop bat and is just screeching and hollering as she's rolling back and forth. But I was watching it and I was thinking, between this and Frankenstein, to be a young maid picking flowers in the woods, it's your death sentence.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the equivalent of answering the phone when you're home alone in the 1980s.
Or going outside to investigate in your underwear.
Yeah, exactly. It was awesome, and I love the guy who's hired to kill Kronos in the bar.
Yeah.
And he starts making fun of Grost. He starts making fun of his hunchback.
Yeah.
And Kronos is like...
rat face, fatty.
Big mouth.
Yeah, and the fight lasts, what, 3 seconds before they're all dead?
Yep, he kills them all almost immediately. But what was the other sequence? It's his friend gets bitten.
Yeah, the doctor.
Turned into a vampire. And
they're trying to kill her, trying to fail.
Oh my God. So for those of you who haven't seen it, the guy's tied to a chair in the most awkward tie chairing experience ever, or chair tying ever.
Between three grown men.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really like, it's a half-assed attempt at tying a man to a chair. So they run a stake through him.
Doesn't work.
They hang him.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And unfortunately, it's something like the chair gives...
No, it's, they try to set him on fire.
They try to set him on fire, and he moves forward, and he stabs himself on his own cross.
Right.
And that's what kills him.
And it's the metal of the cross that, for some reason, is consecrated by God or some such crap. I don't know.
Well, because he's a believer.
Right.
So the cross only works on believers, according to this mythos. but I want to see, like, if you were to remake Kronos now, I want that scene to be, like, 5 attempts. Do you know what I mean? Like, holy water in the face, then this,
let's
then
try
that.
And drown him in a vat.
Because there's a lot of play for a lot more comedy, and I don't know if it works because it's so subtle, right? Because it's just boom, 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 and then it's over, and you're like, oh my God.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. You're like, come on.
But I liked that character. I felt like all of the characters were pretty likable. They all had their reasons for things. You know, Grost was with Kronos because Kronos is this badass. But I also noticed that Kronos never says his own name. Anyone who says his name calls him that.
Captain Kronos.
Yeah. Right from the start. Who is that? It's Captain Kronos. You know, and he never brags about himself.
He doesn't have to. He precedes himself. His reputation. His aura. He enters a room before he does.
And his whole shtick is... he's just a good sword fighter. It's Grost who does all the work. Grost who figures out the vampires. Grost who chases down the vampires. Grost who makes the
well, Carolyn Monroe even comments on
sword.
That. Like, her first scene with them, she's like, why is he sitting on his butt and we're doing all the work?
Yep.
Because he's beautiful and hot.
Because he's Kronos, and that's how he rolls, yo. And so I think it's definitely got me hooked on watching some other Hammer stuff.
Oh, definitely. I love Hammer films.
Now, the comic book that's going to be coming out pretty soon brings back Monroe's character.
Oh, good.
So it's Grost, Kronos,
and... I didn't understand why they couldn't take her with them. What else does she have to do?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, my God. She reaches her hand out, he reaches his hand out, and then swoops up the reins of the horse and rides away.
Like, you dick!
He's a total dick. He is a total
and yet,
dick.
I'd still bang his boots off.
Wow.
Hell yes.
Those are high boots, so that would be a lot of banging.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd probably bang his boots off too. Let's just be honest here.
Kronos.
And they do what I love in films, which is they give him a big scar or they give him something. Somebody will say, what is that about? And then that's the story. You know,
he's got this horrible family secret in his past. And
yep. Doesn't need to be explained. We don't need the... prequel movies, we don't need a novelization of...
But it means he likes rough sex now.
I don't think that's what that's from, but I'm gonna...
No, but that's... Remember Carolyn Monroe was complaining that he was too rough?
Yes.
And that's his excuse.
I forgot about that part.
I just watched it this morning, so...
And it made me wonder like there's this post-coital scene where they're laying in the hay,
mm-hmm.
and then Grost comes in and is like, you know, the vampire struck again. How itchy
Very.
Must that be? Very. Like, that can't be comfortable.
No.
Not even for an actor. I mean, that's hay is just nasty. It's like the sand of...
Well, you know, I mean, he's an ex-soldier and she's a gypsy, so they're probably used to it.
Oh, is that her stick? I mean, she's just supposed to be a gypsy?
We keep coming back to the word stick.
Right?
I know.
Well, I think this...
Last week it was butts, stick now it's stick.
Stick Harrison is... Stick Harrison in the Stick Harrison story. Stick Harrison Adventure Hour. And so that's about what I have on my agenda for the week.
Okay.
I don't have too much else. Do you have anything else you wanna prattle on about or chat about?
Not really, no.
No?
I still haven't thought of... Well, I guess we did settle on Bjork.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Bjork is a great...
Can we trot the swan dress out at some point?
Oh, you have to.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that's at the end. That's the army of me. Okay. Like, her legion symbol is a giant swan. You know, like she would have on her shield or her patches, just this massive white swan, which are actually, like, ultimately terrible birds. Like, they're really awful birds.
They're very mean.
Yeah.
Remember the ones I used to hand feed?
Yes. Yeah, back at the old place. The old place.
The other old place. Standards.
Yep. What I would like to do for next time is there is a new Lovecraft beer out.
Oh.
So we should grab some of that.
Yeah.
And we should do our next show. And if you have ideas or concepts or anything that you think we should dive into or delve into...
I thought you were going to say anything we should die from.
Anything we should die from? I mean, if you want to send us...
How would you like to see us die?
Well-phrased, very polite death threats. We'll read some of our favorites on the air if we can.
Or if you'd rather submit an obituary.
For us?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dark. Okay, but yeah. send it to thenovelsound@gmail.com. Do Twitter at Dork Radio.
Enough said.
Or on Facebook at Fear the Dorks. And I believe that's how we're approachable, right?
Yep,
so if you need us,
pretty much.
That's where you can get us.
Yep.
If you haven't seen Captain Kronos, by all means, it's free on YouTube. So definitely go and do that. If you've seen The Void, or you haven't seen The Void...
It's streaming on Netflix and you should watch it.
Yeah, it's not awful. I didn't fall in love with it.
Don't listen to Eric. I'm the horror movie expert. It's great. Go watch it.
So play this little game. Are you more of an Annie or are you more of an Eric? And if
you want to be more of an Annie.
And let us know what musical, tap dancing musical you would want.
Definitely.
Yeah. I would want an Alvin and the Chipmunks tap dancing musical.
You would.
The Muse Squeakle?
All right, it's time to sign off.
All right.
Definitely.
And have a great day. Oh, closing music. So I have been really into this hip-hop artist.
Okay.
Called Kay Flay.
Never heard of him.
Her. Yep. This is a track called Blood in the Cut.
Okay.
And I think that you will hopefully enjoy it.
I probably will.
Until then, we will see you in a couple of weeks. I believe the next cool out is going to be either Rocky Erickson or something along those lines.
Sounds good.
The boy I love's got another girl. He might be fucking her right now. Have an apartment. Thought if I was smart, I'd make it far, but I'm still at the start. Guess I'm contagious. It'd be safest if you ran. Fuck, that's what they all just end up doing in the end. Take my car and paint it black. Take my arm, break it in half. Say something, do it soon. It's too quiet in this room. I need noise. I need the buzz of a sub. Need the crack of a whip. Need some blood. San Francisco.